This episode of Enterprise Radio is brought to you by the Before It Happened podcast series. From transportation and AI to just anything you can put in your home, office, or pocket, you'll hear from the innovators themselves as they tell their stories of how they brought those visions to life. To listen in or to subscribe, simply visit beforeithappened.com.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
And once again, this is Eric Dye, and welcome to Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today we're visiting with Indiana Sue, the regional director at Operation Smile. Operation Smile has provided hundreds of thousands of safe surgeries for those born with cleft lip and cleft palate. As the director, Indiana is covering the regions of Central America and the Caribbean. Coming to us from Nicaragua, Indiana, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you for having me and being able to highlight all the great work our foundation and people on the ground are doing.
Well, you're certainly more than welcome and looking forward to learning more myself. Now, if you would, for starters, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became involved with Operation Smile and what was your path to becoming the regional director for Latin America?
Okay, so I began Operation Smile in 2010 as a program coordinator for Nicaragua. At the time, we used to host only 3 or 4 missions, like surgical missions a year. And after a year of serving in that position, I was promoted to executive director. I was one of the youngest ED that the region had. And after going on and just seeing like what was the real need in our country, I was, right now at the moment we're based in Nicaragua, I began like developing more programs, opening our care center and expanding our programs. And because of that, we became one of the leading centers in the region. Currently, that foundation, when I left it, it did almost like 18,000 consultations, serving 2,000 patients and almost 300 surgical patients a year. And from then, they promoted me to regional director for Operation Smile in Central America and the Caribbean. And then I went on supporting country strategy, stakeholder engagement, and more or less organizational goals within the region. And this allowed me, all of my background and like coming within the organization allowed me to grow as a professional and serve the organization on a larger scale and see how I could kind of not replicate what I did in Nicaragua, but kind of like help other countries just kind of build up or ramp up surgical programs and activities.
What little I've heard already is quite impressive and looking forward to hearing a lot more now. Tell us in regards to COVID-19, what were the main challenges Operation Smile faced during the pandemic?
Well, the main challenges have been exactly the quarantine and pausing for a bit, the work we do with patients with cleft conditions. But I think that Operation Smile just paused a little bit. It just was like reassessing what we can do, how we could face the pandemic, and how we could navigate it. And then the other challenges we had was supporting just our frontline health workers. We currently work with a lot of volunteers that are like frontline, right? They work at the hospitals, they work on the field, and they take time off to support our surgical activities and programs. And I think also that just coming into seeing COVID and all the challenges it represents, how we could help these people when they're not with us. And since much of them are volunteers, we're just like, they're here for us when things are not that bad, but now when things are really bad, how we could be there for them.
In continuation, just a little here, what are the current challenges the virus is presenting in Latin America now, and how has Operation Smile had to change its operations to deal with it?
The main challenges are more about OR or hospital space to perform our surgical program, mobility due to traveling or transport restrictions, and then catastrophic expenditure for patients because they need to seek, reach, and receive care. And I think that because most of our patients live in countries that have informal jobs, that's something that because of the pandemic and the stop and or the quarantine that represents it for everybody, they kind of had to see how they're going to access care while not having an income or a stable income. And then during the peak of the pandemic, I think, and urgent patient treatment, we had just had to innovate on how to continue delivering care and providing hope for our patients in the midst of COVID. We did come up with a couple of ideas. One of them was virtual care, which represented a bit of challenge that we had to gear up patients with data and phones so they can receive treatment. Another way was also supporting most of our patients with food kits, working alongside with NGOs with food banks and just trying to provide them with food because they couldn't actually have any access or access to kind of like receive income. So I think most of the challenges we were facing, and we are still facing, more about space and how to deliver surgical programs and our comprehensive treatment. But we have come with innovative ways on how to address this and how to move forward and not neglecting our patients that still need us out there.
Yeah, certainly appreciate your input there. And even talking further about the virus, what have you learned about leadership specifically during the trials and tribulations of the last 18 months?
You hear the word resilience, and everybody thinks they're resilient on things that happen in your daily life. But I think that I really learned what resilience means, what collaboration means, and a whole new definition about caring and service. While some of us are at home, health workers, police, researchers, and others are out there fighting against COVID so we could just feel safe. And as human, we have lost a lot. And it's time to just step up and help support and rebuild the world and keep caring going on for those that still need us. So I think that it was just like a broader sense of resilience, collaboration, and what was my piece in that, how I could inspire other people to just come aboard and say how we could keep on helping the region, how we could keep on just like innovating for people that still rely on us. I think one of the things that really hit me, and this was like, you know, there were like kind of waves of COVID. So in one of the first waves when it was coming down and we reopened the center, a mother just came up. I was visiting Nicaragua Center that moment. Mother came up and she just told me, when are you going to be able to operate my child? And I'm not the ED right now at the moment in Nicaragua, but I was visiting, and she recognized me from far back. And I was like, well, I don't think that's possible right now. Like, there's much pressing needs right now of just dealing with COVID. But in the meantime, you could have comprehensive treatment. And then I recall her just saying, what do you need? Do you need to work? Do you need get money? And I was like, no, you just need time. But at that moment, it just shook me and say, well, so what else are you doing? Like, COVID is there, but there's always going to be something. So for me, it was more about resilience and just supporting with all my resources and what I could do to just inspire people, collaborate with them, and just try to be innovative for those people who still rely on us.
Yes, certainly a lot has been learned during the last 18 months, and certainly appreciate your sharing what you've gone through and how you're tackling that as well in regards to leadership specifically. Now, this episode of Enterprise Radio is being brought to you by our partners at the Before It Happened podcast series. Before any world-changing innovation, there was a moment, an event, a realization that sparked the idea. The Before It Happened podcast series is a show about that idea. Each week, host Donna Laughlin takes a deep dive into a singular light bulb moment that inspired the visionaries to push forward and change our lives. To listen in or to subscribe, visit beforeithappened.com. Again, that is beforeithappened.com. Today, we're joined by Indiana Sue, the regional director at Operation Smile, that has provided hundreds of thousands of safe surgeries for those born with cleft lip and cleft palate. And she's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, a lot of work went virtual during COVID-19. How did Operation Smile adjust to the virtual environment, first of all, and are there aspects that will remain virtual even as certain parts of life do return to normal?
So I think it has become part of our daily lives, not only for Operation Smile, but for the whole world. And it was challenging at the beginning. Patients didn't have cell phones, data. They didn't even know how to connect via Teams, for example, or Skype. They didn't know how to have video conferences, and I think that was a bit of challenge. But we began sorting a lot, and roughly 20 to 30% of our patients in Central America receive treatment virtually. And that's not only now that we have to do it for COVID restrictions, but I think it also gave us an opportunity to learn that it is beneficial for patients. Like some of these patients, we save them up to 1 or 2 days trip with a call or a session. And I think that virtual is just here to show us that it's never going to replace in-person consultations, but at least for some follow-up treatment, it can support, and it just saves a lot of time, distance, and money to patients that at this point, it's just like it has become part of our daily lives, and we are trying to incorporate this in upcoming years and part of our strategy and how patients are accessing care and how we are delivering it with the highest quality possible. There are some challenges, though. One of the challenges of many patients are and parents are, for example, if you call in, they have to kind of like assure that the patient's not going to be distracted, that the patient's going to be engaged with the cell phone, because we're talking about children that could either be 4 or 5 years old or 10, 15. Like it's just like you're trying to benefit a whole range of ages that it has become some challenging through the phone, but I think we are making it work, and patients and parents have seen the benefit of having things virtual.
Another question for you, Indiana. What are the main initiatives Operation Smile is currently undertaking in Latin America? Touch on that a little, if you would.
Main initiatives are we are trying to decentralize our program. Most times we were in cities. Patients were going towards our centers, towards our surgical sites. Now we're looking more into where are, like, understanding our patients, where patients are, how we could bring access or care to them, how we could register, like, the whole country, like, who has patients with cleft conditions, who, how many are out there, in which cities they are. Let's try to be more driven towards trying to be more patient-centered, I think. And then the second thing would be health system strengthening. We have global standards of care, meaning we operate in hospitals and we make sure that everything is calibrated, resources and equipment are there, and make sure we have enough personnel volunteering that just in case of a situation we could address with a robust team. And now we're not only focusing on supporting when we enter into a surgical site, but we also want that our footprint and that environment stays supported. With this, we are focusing in the next 5 years in Central America and mostly that to support training in hospitals, for example. Pediatric anesthesia is not that kind of specialty in LAC culture, but it's much needed. So we are also connecting our equipment partners or donors to ministry and hospitals so they can invest in essential equipment to keep on supporting high-quality surgeries. And this is essential, and we have the means, intentions, and connections to help support and improve our health system. So it goes beyond only doing our surgical side, coming in and out from a hospital, and then providing comprehensive care. It's more than that. It's more about how we could leave behind all the good work and leave those standards on all of the opportunities we have for our organization and help build that into the health system and how we can improve that.
Out of curiosity, how does Operation Smile work with ministries of health? I understand that you do deal with the ministries of health. What types of projects are you collaborating on, and are ministries of health willing to work with NGOs and other organizations?
So how we are working with the Ministry of Health is that it's really efficient and effective to work with them because overall they have the infrastructure within the country, they have the means, connections, they have everything that if we just team up, it's not just easier for the organization, it's easier for patients and health workers to just support this great initiative or surgical care. So right now what we are doing with them is that we're working in donating equipment, for example, OR equipment or emergency equipment. During the pandemic, we also donated, for example, oxygen concentrators. We donated ventilators or even spare parts of ventilators. So we're trying to gear them up and seeing how we could support them, not only by donating things, but also by training them how you could train more, especially things that probably you don't have in country or just further their knowledge, and how we could also get the equipment and to that state of not only donating equipment, but how we could make it sustainable, how we could just reinforce the biomedical piece of it and train those people or the incredible people that they have at hospitals, and see how we could just like further on, like, oh, all the impact we have through donations. And then for the next few years, what we're collaborating more in is also like, once we get to know where patients are, how we're going to articulate with the Ministry of Health and supporting these kind of surgical programs in those sites. What are the best hospitals, what are the best ways we could support and come in and try to support patients and hospital-wise. I think also this has helped us to kind of like just improve the ecosystem of the health system where we're functioning. And then with NGOs, we have worked with them and we have partnered with them. Even during COVID, we were able to articulate a lot of food kits. Again, because we're not all over the country. We are in certain sites of the country. So when we're teaming up with NGOs, we could just join efforts and channel through them on donations, like, for example, the food kits we had for those patients that were had, like, scarce food. And I think it's just seeing how we could maximize our relationship or our network and see how we could support each other instead of just taking it all on, and see how we could just expand and make more of partners and great connections, so we could just improve a lot of lives without just being ourselves.
Now, I understand Operation Smile has stated that its goal is not only to provide holistic care for patients with cleft conditions, but also to help build more robust health systems too. How is Operation Smile attacking that ambitious goal, and what does that look like in Latin America specifically?
We are not only trying to provide comprehensive care for patients, but we're trying to leave just an impact in hospitals. We're trying to say we're not only about CLEF, but we have more resources, we have more knowledge and training that we could transfer or kind of train hospitals. So we're trying to just see how much more we could just help build more robust systems. There's a lot of things that hospitals are needing. And they have told us, for example, would be the biomed piece that I just mentioned. Most of the time they receive a donation of equipment, but then they're also like, we don't know how to give supplement maintenance. And we have access to a lot of biomeds and a lot of like education and training for these. So it's just like making it more sustainable at hospitals, seeing how we could just improve the healthcare system and just trying to see that we're not only a CLEF organization that provides CLEF surgery, but after that, how we continue helping hospitals and our partners, the Ministry of Health, the government, and seeing how we can just boost those connections and trying to just leave further impact or care that lasts in these countries.
Well, I tell you, it's quite incredible what you all are doing globally through Operation Smile, and just keep doing what you're doing. It's quite an impact that you're leaving, and it's phenomenal what you're doing as well. Now, a couple more questions for you. Actually, what motivates you to carry out this type of work, and what advice do you have for others seeking roles in the nonprofit space like yourself?
Working in an NGO environment is not easy. It's not profitable. It's about service, it's caring for others, and sometimes even before you care for yourself. As our founder, Dr. McGee, says, it's about making someone else's problem your problem. And when you see the impact of that, and that the world may not remember your name and what you did to them, but you made it better step by step, that is what motivates me. The legacy of a better world and less suffering. And then you see personal cases. I had this case in 2013 in one of our surgical sites. I just recall my mother coming in, and she was nervous. She had two children that were born with such conditions. When we engaged her, I don't recall exactly why, because we had like 200 patients on site, but I engaged with her, and asked her how she's feeling because she seemed so nervous. And I recall she just saying that her husband didn't want her children to have surgery and that she just escaped from him. And she was there and she's like, please make sure that my children get operated because my husband's going to be so upset when I go back. And I could only imagine that mother going back to that house and the arguments or anything that could happen. And I tried to convince her, saying, well, let's try to seek help here. And she's like, no, just provide care for my children, and that's it. I'm a mother, and you just need to help me do that for them. When I saw the children, one of them was a baby of 18 months old, and another one was 5 years old. For the 5 years old, she didn't take into account what her mother was enduring at that time. She, one of the things I said, we want to have surgery, and she's like, yes, and why? And she's like, because I want people to come at my birthday. And that just broke me. I just saw my mother being there, and her with all of this, like, culturally, like, she needs to go back to her husband. Unfortunately, she needs to go back to her husband. She doesn't know why I waited her there. Then the kid doesn't know about that suffering, but she also suffers because she's 5 years old and nobody has ever gone into her birthday. And you're just like, how you could serve as those people? Like, I bet you she doesn't remember me, and that's not the case. It's just more about how you make that, how you motivate or inspire somebody to not feel left out, how you support that mother going back and just trying to care because she came and endured a lot of during her trip to the site, and how you can improve life on all skills for that family. So for me, it's about service and just caring and seeing that people, your actions leave an positive impact on people. So that's what inspires me.
Indiana, we really appreciate what you're doing on behalf of Operation Smile and introducing what you are doing to the audience here, and really appreciate your time. Where can listeners learn more about Operation Smile and also support the initiative?
They can visit our webpage and learn more at operationsmile.org or any social media. You can find us. You can find Operation Smile. You can find we are over in 30 countries. You can find a country-specific Operation Smile if you want to support. And I would motivate them to learn more about how they could support. We're not only about medical volunteers. We have student volunteers. We have several people ranging from all ages just being a volunteer and supporting. And even if you don't have time to volunteer, but you have time to spend your community to just kind of promote awareness towards the organization, that's everything to help just towards helping us deliver and providing care for patients. So please go on to those sites, and we're available most of the time in all parts of the country, so please just reach out and be engaged.
Again, listeners, that is operationsmile.org. Indiana, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you so much.
Again, we've been visiting with Indiana Sue from Nicaragua, the regional director at Operation Smile that has provided hundreds of thousands of safe surgeries for those born with cleft lip and cleft palate. And again, for all the details, visit operationsmile.org. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.
This episode of Enterprise Radio was brought to you by our partners at the Before It Happened podcast series. Nearly 20 years ago, Donna Laughlin launched a public relations firm with the sole purpose of helping visionaries tell their story to the world. Now, two decades later, she's sharing those stories and more with you. To listen in or to subscribe, simply visit beforeithappened.com. Again, that is beforeithappened.com.